I appreciate it. We're not doing the 20% thing anymore. I'm here 100%, just like the Florida Marlins.
I'll get back to you on that. Is Ben going to be a Steeler?
I don't know. I think it's honestly, I could see either. I could see either scenario unfolding the way that you'd think that it would, and I'm not sure that either one of them makes any more sense than the other. They're both palatable options for the Steelers. His cap number being what it is, it's really hard for them to not need to come down off of that quite a bit. So we know that that's something that's going to have to happen. As far as quarterback options go, considering how much Ben is going to cost if he's not on the team, they really don't have much of a choice. So they're either going to be done with him and Mason Rudolph is going to be your starter, or it's going to be Ben Roethlisberger for another year. I think the real question is, does that mean for them they intend to operate this season as if they are contenders? Now, I wasn't really hip to the idea that they were contenders last year anyway, with what they had with the transition that they were kind of under and really still are in many ways. I don't think that changes much this season with or without Roethlisberger. They're not going to be a legitimate contending team. I can say this, in Pittsburgh in particular, if you're not even trying to compete, that's a different story. You're the Pirates. But as far as the Steelers go, fans expect them to be at least spending, which is to say at least trying to be competitive. Whether they will or not, I think it's kind of beside the point. But I think Roethlisberger coming back at a certain cost point suggests that they are going to try to contend. And with that, I don't know how deep their cuts are going to have to come, but there are a couple guys that in a normal year might not be, kind of showing the door the way that they're going to have to be. So I think they're going to try to compete. I don't know how good that's going to make them. I think they're probably an 8-8 or worse team. But at the very least, I think this is not exactly the way that their plan was supposed to have turned out. And that's really the position they're in more than anything. They're down probably minimum $15, $17 million in cap space they anticipated having when they put all of this together. So I think it's just something they're going to have to work through and still at the same time identify their quarterback in the future. I'm not sure they know who that is yet.
What about Dwayne Haskins in this?
He's the interesting scenario saver, if you will. Let's just say, one way or another, they are able to make Haskins a starting level quarterback. Let's say, even I think this might even be, if not on par, maybe a little bit of a reach. Let's say he can be Mason Rudolph after Mason Rudolph leaves via free agency in 2022. That saves the team a considerable amount of money in the short term. Because they're not going to owe Haskins a significant salary for a while. If it turns out that he is their starter, and he's the guy that they want to keep. He's going to be cheap for a little while, and that helps. If you're trying to build the roster, they can be significant buyers in free agency. In fact, they're going to have to be considering after this season, they have like 15 players signed. So you can expect there to be a lot of free agency activity next year, particularly if they're going to take a look at Dwayne Haskins in team mini camps or whatever organized activities they're able to have this off season. Take a look at him again in training camp. If they say, he's good enough to stick here. Let's work on him. Let's build him up. Let's see what we have. This might end up being one of the better moves that they've made over the last 10 years. If you're able to pick up on the dirt cheap, keep in mind, it's not like they picked him up off waivers. They got exclusive rights access to a starting quarterback in the NFL. Now, how good of a quarterback he is remains to be seen, but there's a lot of value you put into a guy that's had the opportunity to start, that's been prepared as a starter, that's been around to soak up kind of the leadership responsibilities. He might not have handled that the best, but he's also a young kid. I don't think that's something that can really be held against him as far as his ability on the field. If he can show up and he can play football, they're going to find a way to get him on the field. So a smart strategic move by the Steelers there, and one that really doesn't have any downside. So worst case scenario, he's no different than JT Barrett, who they signed under the same conditions for last year and then cut, I think, 48 hours into camp this past year. So if it doesn't work out, it's fine. It's really not that big of a deal. But you're looking at a pretty decent amount of upside there. And I'm not saying he's an all-pro player, but if they can get a bridge starter on the cheap while they figure out what they want to do in terms of the draft or free agency, they can turn this around fairly quickly. I like the options that they have, maybe not in the immediate future, but they've done well to work around this all as best they, I think, anywhere are able to do.
J.J. Watt leaves Houston immediately. Didn't take long with T.J. and Derek already on the Steeler roster to have people say, I wonder if he could go to Pittsburgh. How do you view that?
They were saying that last year, probably even before Derek signed.
Right.
Simply put, the Steelers don't have the ability to sign J.J. Watt for even half of his market value. He would have to take a significant haircut just for the honor of playing with his brothers. And perhaps ironically, I think the best way they could make that work is if they cut Derek and paid J.J. what they otherwise would have spent. They don't have the flexibility to sign that level of a player. So assuming J.J. does not want to take a considerable reduction in salary, we're talking probably no more than $2 million. I don't think they're able to do that. It sounds nice and everything, and I'm sure they all want that to happen. But I would imagine that J.J. is going to want to capitalize on, you know, what's likely to be the last couple of years he's got in the NFL left. He certainly has the capability of signing a pretty big multi-year contract with somebody right now, and certainly he's earned the right now that he is a free agent to find the best fit for him. I'm sure they'd all love it in Pittsburgh, and I'm sure Pittsburgh would love to have him, but financially, Pittsburgh's among the worst options that he has in front of him. If it really means that much to him, they can make it work, but he's going to have to play for far less than he has probably since his rookie season.
It would make the Subway commercials more interesting. So... What about the Bud Dupree situation? You're talking about a guy that probably realistically can't play at any kind of level until October, maybe November. Is he even an option to bring back?
I think it's so hard to tell. The edge rush market is always going to be one that isn't in decline. We're going to talk about it as if it is. It's kind of like scalping tickets for the Super Bowl. You're going to hear eventually that the tickets on the streets, you know, brokers are trying to get rid of them. And you go out there, it's like, no, we're going to take it minimum face value for it, and that's going to be 5 minutes before the game. With Bud Dupree, you're going to hear a lot about the injury that he has that should knock his value down, because it's, logically it should. I agree with you. October or November, before you can expect him to be a similar type of explosive player that he was. You're really looking multi-year deal. You're really looking year two for him. I think anyway, that's my opinion. Maybe a contender has the money available to pay him and kind of bring him along slowly and have him fresh for the playoffs. But I don't know how much money he's going to get in year one of the deal. But somebody is going to eventually, you know, bump the price up to get him to come in there and give him an opportunity to work with him. And get him comfortable on a multi-year deal. I don't think the Steelers could pay him probably by year two if they really wanted to. That would be a really strange contract. I'm not sure it's one that he would really want to sign into. The Steelers aren't a team that pays a whole lot up front. He's definitely going to get pretty significant offers for upfront cash from a lot of other teams in the league, I'd imagine. I can't say that it's not possible, though, simply because, again, the Steelers don't have a team to field in 2022. That isn't to say they don't have a plan. They weren't kind of, you know, figuring this out as they go, but they could conceivably make something happen. If Dupree's market doesn't, you know, explode the way that maybe he thinks that it would, maybe a 2-year deal makes sense with the Steelers. I could envision a scenario where that might be the best option for both sides. I wouldn't bank on it, though. I don't think it's really possible for either side to get the best out of an investment, you know, again, for what's likely to be one season anyway, for what he could make, assuming a healthy return from an ACL tear, which isn't at all a questionable thing anymore. It's pretty common. You put all that together, I think he's going to get better options elsewhere. That's really what it comes down to. I think he would like to return. I think the Steelers are going to have to pay T.J. Watt through the roof anyway.
Right.
I don't know if they'll want to load up that much money at one position, but you know what? I said the same thing when James Harrison and Lamar Woodley were playing really well. So They found a way to make that work. Maybe this is going to be a priority for them as well. It would be very surprising to me if that were to happen, though. I think Dupree is going to be able to get a pretty sizable, pretty strong market deal, multi-year deal elsewhere.
Ben aside, is there a barometer player that you're looking at to see that they keep or cut that tells you what direction they want to go in?
Boy, I think Ben would be the best example of that.
Yeah,
but,
of course. Yeah, that's why I said him. Him aside, because I wanted to make the question difficult.
How about this? I think, and this is a light version, this is a low-pressure system coming through. I think it's probably Vince Williams. He's not a player they want to lose. He's not making a whole lot of money. We saw what Robert Spillane was able to do last season. Spillane, to me, looks more like a depth player next to a superstar, the way that Devin Bush, also coming back from an ACL tear, looks to me to be in the process of building up. They would rather have Williams in there with Spillane backing him up to have some depth at that position. We saw last year how critically important it was. And I think they plan to have Vince Williams on their team this year, if not for the pandemic, which led to the shorting of the salary cap. I think Vince Williams is very much in their plans. If they're going to cut Vince Williams, and I'll even add for the same reason, just not the depth issue as much, Derek Watt. Those two together, yeah, I think, are expensive, complementary players that in a regular year, when a team wants to be pretty well balanced, they make sense. They're earning the money that they're being paid. It's not a ton, but you're probably going to think twice about it when you're looking at a tight salary cap position. I think they signed both of them with the intentions of them lasting their contracts, but I think things changed. So if they're going to cut both of them, certainly you're looking at a team that is trying to improve its cap position, probably retain a certain quarterback, and with that likely to compete next season. If they're going to keep those guys, I think they're probably going to want to save money at the quarterback position. How much they're able to do with that remains to be seen, but we're going to hear sooner rather than later what they were able to do. But those are two solid NFL players that they would want to keep regularly. I'm not sure they're going to be able to. I know that they definitely want to, and I think that they should, considering the value that both of them would bring, if used in the ways that we're used to seeing those positions used. If they cut both of them, you know that something's going on. If they keep both of them, I think it's a team that's trying to compete.
What's interesting is it sounds like that the parts of the TV contract have all fallen into place and fell into place in December, except for one, and that's Thursday Night Football. Why does the NFL keep doing it? Well, they got 600 million good reasons why.
Yeah,
okay.
That's exactly it. And that's the one that's up in the air too, right? I mean, it's
right.
You never know exactly what way the NFL wants to pivot with that Thursday night contract. And the main thing is, it's not going to be for your primetime networks that are scoring huge with their top sitcoms on Thursday nights. So it's an interesting negotiation. I think the NFL always knew that, but they were willing to fall back on the idea that they can produce it themselves and try to use that as leverage. I'm not sure anyone's really buying it anymore,
no,
just considering the ratings and what we've seen on the NFL Network. They get what they want out of it. I don't think it might not be worth the labor dispute. If anything, I think it's a bargaining chip to go back to the players with. We'll get rid of this if you give us 18 games, something like that for the future. Now probably has more financial merit than scheduling the games out once a week for every team the way that they're doing it. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting scenario. Somebody would definitely want to buy it, but how do you price that right now? It's so hard to tell whether this is like we talked about last week, a 15% reduction in the Super Bowl versus 140% increase in the draft, which happened to be on a Thursday night.
Right.
Which one of these things is true? It's really hard to tell where their market is going. And I'm not sure, to their best intentions, I'm not sure they know. And
no.
As far as the networks go, I'm not sure how they could be sold on the idea that the NFL knows what's going on. A 10-year deal, that's tough right now. I'm not sure. I'm not sure anyone would really go for that beyond the terms of something that they've normally done.
Yeah,
maybe they continue it for a year or two.
Here's the option I look at on Thursday night. ESPN can't take Thursday night. The reason they can't is, what, do you want to put it on NFL Network too? So you don't want the cable to go cable. All right. The next part is that you probably want to get streaming involved. Well, ESPN is ESPN Plus, so they're not. So that part's up. But ABC can do it, where ESPN is producing it and ABC has it, and they use that as a chip to get a Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's not a bad thought. I'd throw Amazon into that as well.
Well, I'm saying that's where the streaming comes in. In other words, ESPN,
right.
Like ESPN, the network, they can farm it to ABC, the over-the-air,
yeah.
Because the streaming's not going to go to ESPN Plus, so they don't want that part. The NFL Network's probably going to have to carry it. So now you've got another cable entity doing it. Now you go ABC, make it over the air there, and it gives you the chip to get a Super Bowl.
Yep, that lines up. Not sure if you're involved in the negotiations.
No,
I'm quietly releasing this to your audience. That makes sense. Look, I can see that.
Look, when I brought it up, Rogers seemed happy. No, I'm just kidding. But, I mean, first of all, these guys overpay for everything. Okay?
That definitely is a factor in it. You know, that certain premium price level, otherwise nobody's coming to the table. You know, they're not talking about a $2 million deal. It's got to be, you know, nine figures. Otherwise, what's the point? You know, that's can we see that's the value of it? I think maybe that's where the conversation starts. Do we really think that there's an increase here, or is there a dramatic decrease?
Well,
and putting all of that together, it's hard to say, platform or otherwise. I mean, they didn't have that question answered yet. I mean, it's such a bizarre position for all of them to be in, and maybe that's why we haven't heard anything about this in roughly a year.
I mean, here is where, from the NFL, here's your position of strength. Top 100 programs of last year, 79 were NFL games. There's your position of strength in the negotiations. Right.
Yep, and that's probably why they don't back down off, at the very least, what they've had plus 20%. You know, they're going to look for a markup on stuff and probably cite technological issues, things that
right.
they're working on, trying to develop. Different things that are going to improve the experience, improve the game even, you know, they'll go with that. But I don't know, maybe it's just me. I think that a decade of broadcasting rights for a sport that's been taking heavy fire over the 10 years that preceded it.
Yeah.
That's tough. That's a big gamble. It's a lot of money and a lot of airtime that you have dedicated to
you
it.
You know what? I made a statement on the show, I don't know, 5 years ago. I said, you feel like these people are almost bulletproof. And this is before the Ray Rice thing hit. Which was then the start of the dominoes of suddenly the rock that was rolling down the hill went valleyed and suddenly had to go uphill. So in the end, it was my fault.
I think it was the one area in which they were so bulletproof, they're going to take fire. You know, people are going to continue attacking them simply because it was, you know, perceived to be kind of unbreakable. And in the end, it was just kind of like, well, you can't be everywhere. You know, Roger Goodell essentially says
right.
that he watched the video, but obviously he didn't because the video came out and he had a significant problem. And that's, you know,
right.
when you have the presentation or the image of being unbeatable and you get humiliated that way by really your own doing in a lot of cases, that's never going to go away.
Well, and the Brady thing with the football, I mean, I'm sorry, you make that disappear in 48 hours. You don't have to make it take 48 months. I mean, they went a year and a half. They went 18 months of that.
I mean, 18 months.
What kind of management was
suspension.
That? Over a 13-pound inflated
yeah.
football.
To me, that was like a $50,000 fine at most. You know, it
get
doesn't.
Rid of
but
it.
That's the thing. All of that pomp and circumstances for a 4-game suspension for Tom Brady, and the original suspension for Ray Rice was 2 games and a 3rd game unpaid.
I know.
And those two things happened pretty close to each other.
Yep.
That's like, oh man, you screwed this up bad.
Yep. Sure.
And that's why you've got him. That's why you've got him on camera saying that you know he owns the mistake and he's going to do better. And it's like, oh, you've already lost. So it's tough. The runaway train's going downhill at that point. I think that's a lot of where we are now. You know, the ratings have declined. I think there, you and I both have, we've talked about this. We both agree that there are dozens of factors of
yes,
why that might be the case.
Absolutely.
But a part of it is all of this. You know, the most public negative parts of the NFL are part of what's driving all this down.
Yeah.
I don't think that anybody can dispute that. That is at least a part of it.
Well, Rodgers getting $40 million a year, so he can own up to the
mistake. He's retiring. I'm surprised he's still there.
Yeah.
I'd imagine he's going to announce his retirement any day now.
That's my announcement for next week. I can't give out all the secrets. All right. Neil, thanks so much. Always a pleasure.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.